Singer-songwriter Sam Beam has been releasing indie folk records under the name Iron and Wine for over a decade. He just released a new record called Archive Series Volume 1, and he's about to release a short film documenting a show he put on at the Jerry Run Summer Theater in West Virginia. Sam sat down with me to talk about the origin of Iron and Wine, his new release, and why everyone is so obsessed with his beard. Let's go ahead and just start off the conversation with you not being Sam. So you go by your moniker, Iron and Wine. What exactly drew you to that name?
Well, I was working on a movie set a million years ago. It seems like it was a long time ago, but I was working on a movie set and we were shooting this little country store and there was this stuff on the shelf called Beef, Iron and Wine. Which seems like a really strange combination of words. I had never seen it before, but I was writing these songs, and it seemed like just an interesting combination of words that kind of described what I was trying to do with the music, minus the beef part, but the iron and the wine part just seemed like this strange contradictory words that kind of described us and our little journey through life. I picked it up and started calling the stuff that I was recording. I would put Iron and Wine on the tapes, mostly just because, you know, I just don't think Sam Beam is that interesting of a name. So it seemed more fun to put Iron and Wine on. It seemed more official.
Well, Sam Beam does sound like, it sounds like something you'd put on a bottle of something, you know, very pretty, like pretty typeface.
I wonder if you would say that if you hadn't seen Jim Beam on a label somewhere. I just wonder if you would think it sounded like whiskey if it hadn't been planted in your head several times.
It's true.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else, that or maybe there's a bakery. I think it's called like Sunbeam, so you could be like a type of bread, or
which,
a type,
you know,
of like whiskey.
The odd thing is, like, no one ever thinks like if someone's name is Daniels. I bet Jeff Daniels doesn't get like, oh, you mean like Jack Daniels? But I get the Beam thing over and over again. I'm like, are you related to Jim Beam? I'm like, man, I wish I was related to Jim Beam. Yes, but unfortunately, I'm not.
Oh, just imagine all of the swag you'd get over the years. Like, you'd get crates and crates of just drinks, and it'd be so great and unhealthy. But, well, I mean, do you think that Iron and Wine, this moniker, still lines up with what you're singing today? Do you think there's going to come a time where you're going to say, look, like, okay, I think I've outgrown this whole Iron and Wine thing. I'm going to pick another name, or I'm going to use Sam Beam or Jim Beam or whatever.
Maybe I should just use it. No, I don't, actually. I don't know. I never thought about it as being a limiting kind of a thing. It seemed pretty wide open. You know, Iron and Wine kind of describes the good and the bad, pleasant and the unpleasant of everything we do. I mean, I definitely feel like people have an association with what they think the sound of that project is, which I've beat my head against for well over a decade now. But at the same time, you know, I think if I started probably like a band with some other people, and I wanted to have its own identity, yeah, I would probably change it. But other than that, I don't really think about it. Also, you know, it's hard enough to get people to recognize your name these days. There's so many bands. I feel like sometimes a little short-sighted for people to change the name of their band every 2 weeks and have to educate people on what they're doing.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you've already established yourself. I mean, the last 10 years, why make a new reputation when this one's perfectly fine? Like, it doesn't have any bad connotations, so far as I know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's for two of us anyway.
Yeah.
I just never thought of it as like a limiting thing. I guess, you know, I could be wrong. Some people probably think I should only be doing certain things. But I always thought of it as just a project name that people recognize. And hopefully over the years they would recognize that it's going to sound slightly different or be talking about different things sometimes.
Well, that brings up a good question then. So, I mean, your first full-length came out in 2002, and I would say it was pretty folky, you know, neo-folky.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, last 10 years, you've released, now you're up to 5, 6 is going to be this month with the Archive series. It seems like you've brought in more influences. You've done some more kind of standard poppy stuff. You've done some jazz, some R&B kind of, you know, thrown into that mix. So it's been interesting to see your music kind of evolve and have this Iron and Wine thing become something more than just a bearded folk musician, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, it's more interesting to me that way. I mean, I definitely like... I like lots of different types of music. You know, at the time when the first record came out, when it started, and people's first blush of what they heard that I was doing, you know, it was just me doing it as a hobby in my spare time. I didn't know how to play. I didn't have a piano. I didn't have, like, all these things that I could put into the recording. I just had a guitar, you know, an acoustic guitar and a banjo. And so that's what I used. I mean, I definitely tweaked it to make the most of the sound that I was getting, you know, kind of took a lot of the low end out and made it sound tinny and strange, just because I could. I don't know. But over the years, yeah, I mean, I think the idea is to challenge yourself, you know, as an artist. It's strange. I mean, I never feel like there's... I always feel like there's something left to try. And it's not... I think it's less me getting bored with what I'm doing at the time. I think it's more of just, you know, let's see what could happen if you try this other thing. That's always been more interesting than perfecting a brand for me for some reason, you know, because it's creative work. It's not, I don't know. I always compare it to like designing a Big Mac. When someone like makes a Big Mac, people don't really want them to change. I think that's why it's so popular, but that's not the business that I'm in. You know, I wanted to try different things and see what happens. But luckily, you know, I get to play the songs over and over again at shows. And so, you know, I get to do them the old ways. I get to do the new ways and switch them up, mix those things up, too. Like play the new songs like the old recording sounded and play the old songs with expanded arrangements the way that the newer records sound. And so so that's fun.
Yeah. Well, I've seen so many... interesting reviews for your style over the years. Phrases like lullaby tunes to one that I read somewhere, music that goes down like moonshine and honey remedy, which I thought that's pretty cool. That sounds delicious.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, you good job
makes
on sounding delicious.
But yeah.
I mean, how would you? Is there a way to describe your music over the last decade? Is there some sort of overarching descriptor, or how would you describe your music?
Oh, come on now.
You can use like food imagery. You're doing pretty well with that.
Yeah. No, it's hard for me to, I don't know. I don't really have a good beat on what I do. I approach it pretty much intuitively. I definitely feel like there's a through line. Only because I'm singing the song. I'm the only one singing the songs on the record, so you can you can, you know, play them back to back and hear some similarities. I don't know. Yeah, like I said, I approach it pretty much intuitively and just hope for the best. I mean, I feel like with my writing, there's always, I mean, I'm still the same person with the same interest. I mean, you know, it's been over a decade, like I was saying earlier. So, I mean, you change in the way you experience new things and you, you know, and you think about things. You have different perspectives. But I think, you know, my heart is still the same, whatever, you know, you want to call your soul or whatever in the inside. And so, you know, there will definitely be similarities. I mean, some things that I think are sacred that aren't treated that way will show up in the tune. Some things that I think are not sacred that are unfortunately treated that way will show up in the tune. You know, just my ideas of the world will pop up. And I think some of those things have been consistent through the years. But just the way I present it has been different. It also, you know, has a lot to do with me doing it over and over again. I mean, when I put the first record out and the next few, I mean, I really just kind of learning what to do or what I was interested in music, because the first ones were just, you know, such a throw off kind of just, well, I have an hour to before I, you know, have to go to work. Why don't I work on this tune that I've been dabbling with? And so, you know, for better or for worse, those subsequent records are what I would do, and I spend all my time doing that.
When I was looking into your history, I thought this was super cool. I mean, back in the day, you used to teach cinematography and script writing in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is really just amazing, because I, you know, love film. But I think you're just such a cool person, Sam. So, I mean, and the thing is, your music has been featured in, oh God, who knows how many TV shows and films, you know, the last decade or so. I mean, is there a particular TV show or movie that you thought was really great that you got to see or hear your music in? Also going to say, you did recently do that Rhiannon Giddens Bob Dylan cover for the Parenthood Series finale, so you could add that to your list.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to. I have a list that I refer to often. you know, I got to be honest, I kind of stay away from, I don't really watch the one. I have cable. Unfortunately, I guess, you know, the only one that I've seen recently was the Twilight one. So that was cool, I guess. You know, I don't get in there and engage with it the way that I probably should.
Well, out of all of them, I mean, the Twilight one is really the one that all the teenagers kind of got to know you through that film. And now, I'll admit, like, that film, it could have been better, I think, in a lot of ways. But the soundtrack, I think, was the best thing that came out of, like, just the series. It was a great soundtrack. And I think your song at the end really, that you and then Radiohead coming in at the end with 15 Steps, I think that was amazing. So, I mean, I was going to bring that up, too, because that movie was horrible, but you were probably one of the more redeeming factors of it. So thank you for that.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. You're very kind. You're very kind. It was very helpful to be included in that movie. Yeah, it's a kick in the head to be playing shows, and then all of a sudden this movie comes out, and then all of a sudden there's like all these new young faces in the audience. You know, it was a blessing. I never finished the movie, so I can't say how good or bad it was. But
you can skip it.
You know, there's just not enough hours in the day to watch all. You know,
it's true. So much fun. Yeah, actually, someone should probably make a clock of how many times your music has been featured and stuff. That would probably be like a marathon of sorts. Like, you could binge listen to all the music and all the shows and movies. That would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be time well spent.
You watch. Someone's going to do it now. You're going to regret that.
I wouldn't stop them. I was a quick, wet boy, diving too deep for
you playing in West Virginia last year. That was a great show. I loved the show. I was there for it. Jerry runs Summer Theater. I mean, when I first heard you were going to be playing in West Virginia, you know, first thought was like, oh, is it going to be Charleston, which is the capital, or Morgantown, which is like the college town?
And, or the other town.
Or the other place, the two places in West Virginia. And then you were like, no, I'm not going to play in those two places. I'm going to play in the Jerry Run Summer Theater in Cleveland. And I was like, where is this? But driving out there, I mean, it's very scenic. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's kind
really
of
a beautiful time of year.
Yeah. And it was just, it really showed off the beauty of West Virginia, going through the mountains and the hills and, you know, playing in this little like home. Kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's just very woodsy and beautiful and homemade. And how did you come up with this idea to play in West Virginia, but then to also to play in this particular place in West Virginia at the Jerry Run Summer Theater?
Well, I mean, I wish I could say it was a super punk rock attitude thing. Like Charleston and Morgantown were too big, too big for their britches. So I was going to play Jerry Run. No, I was more. Well, we had this project coming up. You know, we were going to start releasing these old tunes, this archive series release. And my manager, Howard Grinnell, has a lot of ties in West Virginia, some family in West Virginia, so he keeps up. And he had seen this article that someone had written in one of the Chicago papers about Dusty's place and what he was doing there. You know, sort of a lifestyle point of interest, little short story, but it caught Howard's attention because he's from there, and so we went down there one time and met Dusty and just saw what it was all about, and then he brought it to me. It's just a fun idea, you know, just this idea of this guy Dusty who just loved music, and so he built this thing. This place, this venue in his backyard in the middle of nowhere out of, you know, just purely because he liked doing it and built an audience. And there's a whole musical community there now because what Dusty's little dream. And so, I thought it was super fun. And, and as a nod to some of the sound, the banjo sound and all this stuff on this old record and just the idea of, someone making something from nothing just for the love of the art. It rang true with me, and so we talked to them, and they were super nice, and their kids had seen me at Bonnaroo, so they were like, Mom and Dad, you got to do it. So I can thank Bonnaroo for getting me the Jerry Run gig. And it just seemed like a fun way to spend the afternoon, and just, you know, a unique place to play, and, you know, people that you wouldn't normally play to or people you wouldn't normally meet. I mean, I don't get to go to the middle of nowhere and the mountains of West Virginia very often anymore. and so it was super fun. That whole show really was a magical evening for me. It was just, it's such a kick in the head to go, all of his regular audience that come to hear the bluegrass, they didn't know who I was from Adam. And so they were confused. You know, they were, what is this? And then the younger kids who had traveled were like, what is he doing here? You know, everyone was confused for one reason or another. And it was just so fun. That was basically what it was about, just as a fun metaphor for the whole Iron and Wine project in the beginning, and also a way to shine a light on what Dusty was doing, because I think those kinds of projects, those kinds of people are really fun and important.
And it was, you're saying it was a great show. It was an amazing show. Like, it was so intimate. And you're totally right. It was a confusing experience for everyone. I sat in the back, and there were a couple probably in their 50s or 60s, and they were regulars, I assume. They would come, you know, every week or so for a show there in the summer. And they were just, I think they left maybe a couple songs in because they were just so confused. Like, who is this person that's not playing, like, old traditional music? And I was like, oh, gosh. It was such a good show, though. And what's funny is that it was a good show. Everyone that stayed enjoyed themselves. And it was also, you were very funny. You were very fun to be in the same room with. And I guess that's something that I never realized, because I'm so used to this kind of, not sad folk, but kind of, just kind of quiet kind of music. And then you just go up there and you cursed a little bit. It was really funny. And it was just, it was such a great time. You were a true entertainer.
Well, thank you. I tried to be. I have my moments. It's fun. I like to have fun. It's odd to have this art that I've spent so much of my life making that doesn't seem to be able to include that part of my personality for some reason. There's a lot of poets I've read have the same issue. It's hard to, it's hard. You try to make these songs, and for some reason, what inspires me to write a tune is sort of a solemn space mm-hmm. or event or something, rather than a joke. Jokes don't seem to make me want to get that flash down on the paper and save it forever for some reason. I don't know. Jokes seem so fleeting, and that's why they're fun, because they come up and then they're gone, and you're waiting for the next one. Whereas the things that land in the songs states are, I don't know, for some reason, something that I need to be reminded of in a permanent way. But it's strange. I always wish I could make funnier songs. I end up cracking jokes in the middle between songs, and then you go into... I mean, I don't feel like the songs are necessarily real intensely depressing.
No, they're
songs,
not downers.
You know what I mean? They're not mopey at all. They're solemn, and they can be heavy.
Yeah.
But it always just seems like such a strange contrast to go from a rather heavy song to cracking jokes. But I guess that's what life is like.
Well, it maybe humanizes you a bit more, hearing you like just kind of go up on stage and be witty in between songs.
Drop some F-bombs.
You did.
Scare all the older people out of the audience.
Oh gosh, I loved it. You there's one time I think where you're like, so I'm about to curse here. So everyone just, shut your ears. It was just
in the song.
Yeah, it was just great. I loved it. You did a great job cursing and singing.
Oh, thanks. I practice cursing a lot, so I think I've gotten pretty good at it.
I think you're a pro. You could go international. But you, like, this was
doing the league.
Oh gosh, can you imagine like a dodgeball league but for cursing? Oh, that'd be great. But this is the Dairy Run Summer Theater was what, your first performance in West Virginia?
I guess so. I mean, definitely the one that I remember. I mean, it's hard to say, you end up playing so many places over the years, it kind of blur. I can't imagine that I haven't played in Charleston or Morgantown at least once.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wouldn't bet my life on it. So yes, let's just say yes. That was the one time.
It was the most memorable.
So it's going to burn into my brain.
Well, you were raised in Appalachia, right? You were raised in South Carolina or North Carolina, is that right?
I was born born and raised in the Piedmont area, they call it.
Okay.
It was in Columbia, South Carolina.
So okay.
State government seat and the home of the Carolina Gamecocks. close to Appalachia. I mean, we would go hiking and camping and stuff when I was a kid.
Okay.
Up there all the time.
Well, what were your, I guess, let's assume Jerry Run Summer Theater, first time performing in West Virginia. What were your, did you have any perceptions of West Virginia before coming in? And did those change after you came here?
I've been to West Virginia lots of times. But never, never for work. It's always, go camping or hiking. And so I'd seen a lot of it
And also, you know, I ended up driving through quite a bit. Even if we didn't play, I had to, usually had to go through West Virginia to get to, from one place to another. When you're touring on the East Coast, I guess I didn't really have any expectations that were changed. I mean, you know, if you're asking if I expected everyone to be like wearing overalls and a piece of straw in their mouth, no, I didn't. Oh my goodness, they don't wear straw hats here. I didn't have any of those epiphanies. No, I mean, I've been there a lot and sort of knew what I sort of knew what I was getting into, but at the same time, you're not always prepared for the idiosyncrasies that pop up, people that stay in the same place for a long time. I met a woman that night who was getting ready to go on a vacation to Florida, and she had never been out of West Virginia before, and she was, you know, in her 50s, like late 50s, and that kind of perspective, just, you know, you're not always prepared for that kind of an idea, you know, because everyone travels now, mm-hmm. and so, you know, everyone, you know, not that like everyone travels as much
as
like
you do,
a traveling musician, right? I was a musician, but at the same time, most people have gone on a few trips.
Yeah.
And so, and not that that's just, you know, I'm not saying that's just peculiar to West Virginia, but there's always people that you meet that you're not prepared for that kind of perspective. And it always makes, you know, it always makes it interesting. You know, you meet people who, you know, you sit down to write a story and you have a character in mind. And I don't know if I would ever sit down and come up, you know, just this person pops in my head that has never been, you know, outside of like a, let's say like a 10 or 15 mile radius. Like, what would their perspective on life be like? You know, I don't know if that would pop into my head to get that on paper without having met this person. It's just, you know, it's, you always have to, you never know, like, who you're going to meet when you go on these trips.
Yeah, and you never know what you're going to eat either, because I'm sure you had either some Tudor's biscuits or some pepperoni rolls while you were here.
Well, I have been initiated in the pepperoni roll years ago, and so the pepperoni roll did not faze me either. As delicious as it was. Two by two.
So with you performing at the Jerry Renn Summer Theater, someone took footage of you, and I guess now you're making that into a documentary. I guess you could call it a documentary. Dreamers and Makers are my favorite people. So can you talk about that a little bit? Like, what can we expect from it? And is this going to be like a series, or is this just going to be a standalone thing?
You know, we're still, I'm not sure if it's going to be a series or not. I mean, the idea was, to go to Jerry Run and record these songs, be playing these older songs that I hadn't really played ever because of this archive series coming out. So we thought, I don't really have time this year to like tour behind the record and things like that. And so let's go and do the show and we'll record it and we'll put it out and hopefully that'll sort of satisfy that necessity, this sort of promotional necessity. And it's fun. I haven't done any filming like that before. So we had our friend Jamie come with his camera team and recorded the show. And then we thought, you know, let's expand it. So, I mean, because concert films are boring. So let's expand it. I mean, we came to this place because of Dusty. Let's, let's talk to Dusty and film, the idea of the behind this whole Jerry Run place, this whole venue here. And so that was basically it in a nutshell. I mean, I can't imagine that we would do a movie for every release, but I wouldn't say never. I mean, we'd probably do some. This one was fun. It's a documentary kind of show. I think it's like a half hour kind of show. So it's a short film.
Okay.
But definitely fun to make. I mean, there's a lot of characters out there. fun to talk to. And so that was the idea, just to sort of make it a personality piece, give it some context beyond just the concert. Because I think that's fun for, this whole archive series is really, for the super fans who were so into that first record and want some more of that. Or, the archive series is sort of designed for those kinds of fans who, are interested in, demo material, how a song begins mm-hmm. or develops. So I feel like the concert would be fun for those kinds of folks, but maybe reach a few other folks just as a point of interest kind of a film. And so Dusty was super fun to talk to. He's funny.
Yeah, he seems so just based off that trailer, he seems like he's a character. And I saw him in person, too. He seems very lovely. So I'm sure he made for some wonderful little cut scenes and all that.
He was great.
But with this archive series, volume number one's coming out this month. I mean, it features all this kind of material, like you said, demos, unreleased, long neglected. How did the project come about? Was this kind of a thing in the last couple of years where you're thinking, oh, I have so much stuff I haven't used, I should put it to good use? Or was it something else?
Yeah, kind of like that. I mean, just to be clear, there's no demos on this release. This is all just old songs. But the whole thing came about just, when I put the first record, I wasn't like I sat down and wrote that record. I've been writing songs for a few years. And so it was just sort of plucked those 10 or whatever it was from this giant pile of songs. And that giant pile of songs included a lot of stuff, someone learning how to write a tune, for better or for worse. And so there's all this stuff that was laying around, and, at the time, there were some songs that I wanted to put out, but as you go on, I don't like looking back and, this is fun now because it's been so long, but I don't tend to try to put out everything that I do. I just kind of keep moving forward. I'm always interested in what's around the corner, much more so than what I'm wading through at the moment. And so it was easy to sort of kind of forget about them and keep moving forward. But that said, I mean, there was so much material, and it sounds, it's just like the Creek Drink the Cradle and the Seeing the Rhythm kind of stuff.
It is.
And people have been, expressing interest. It wasn't so much that I was reluctant to put it out. I mean, there's some decent stuff. It's fun it's been really funny to go back and listen to them because, some things that I thought were good weren't so great. Some things that I thought were, really cringeworthy weren't so bad. And so, it's fun to see how your memory plays tricks on you and to, shake hands with yourself from 15 years ago. And so it wasn't that I was reluctant to put them out. I just got busy doing other things. And by the time I had a moment to put them out, it just didn't seem like the right time. It hadn't been long enough. Whereas now I feel like I've put them out and people can really see the distance between 2000 and
2015, which is, I think, is more fun than, you know, if I put them out, you know, right after. And people, I thought maybe people would see it as, you know, you can either listen to the stuff he does now, or here's the old stuff that you know, it seemed like you were picking from a menu, whereas now it seems like more of a, well, like I said, the archive. I mean, it feels like you are digging through the archive.
Do you think there's going to be, I mean, there's a one at the end of this, so I assume we might see a volume number two in the next 10 years or something?
Yeah, you know, I don't know how often it'll be, whether it'll be a regular thing, but, you know, it could be anything. I mean, that pile of songs is still pretty big. I mean, put out, I think, how many is on this one? 16 or so? I mean, it's like two records. I mean, we could have put it all out and just punished people. You know, it's too much to absorb at one time, trying to be a nice host. So, you know, we just picked the ones that we thought would make a fun collection and save the rest for some other time. And then, you know, like I said before, we could do demos. One thing, the record, I did a record with Calexico several years ago now, and we've been talking about going back and recording a few more and doing a kind of release for that. You know, there's all these sort of the demo versions of those tunes and a bunch of live stuff. You know, the series kind of is good for those kinds of things. Yeah, there's shows from all over the years that we've recorded, and lots of demo versions of songs that ended up on records. So it's hard to say what, I don't know. We're just kind of playing it by ear. All the ideas seem exciting, but I'm not exactly sure. I'm a little hesitant to make it like a real consistent release schedule.
So I guess just to kind of end on a lighthearted note, and I mentioned it towards the beginning of the chat, and you probably get so many questions about this, and you probably know what I'm going to ask you. Sure. What do you think about your beard?
Oh, my beard. I think about it a lot. I mean, I probably think about the beard more than most things in life. Actually, the only time I think about it is when I look in the mirror for a second, brush my teeth or whatever. Other than that, I have a beard because I'm a lazy bum. I don't like to shave. But I will say, I never imagined that the beard would be such a big deal, because all my friends were all lazy bums, and we all have beards, and I just never thought it would be such a big deal. But ever since I put that first record out, I was like, you would think that I had invented beards or something. It's insane.
You basically did. I mean, you're like, if you search for like beard indie artist, you will probably pop up on the top of that list. So kudos on that.
Probably. It's crazy. I could never tell when I started out putting music out whether the music was just that uninteresting that that's all they could talk about was a beard. or maybe I had missed something and I had invented the beard at some point and just didn't realize what I was doing. No, it was just always confusing to me. I mean, I'm glad for the attention. Don't get me wrong. It's nice to be so associated with facial hair, I guess.
Well, I'm the same way, but not with facial hair. People really like my
curly.
I have curly Jewish hair. I have a Jufro, if you will. So people really like talking about my curly hair because it's big, and it's not like an Afro big, but it's really big and, you know, has a lot of
big
volume
enough.
And it's big enough. And I guess that's when they think about Joni, they'll think, oh, Joni has a great voice and her hair is so great. So I don't know. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, is it just because my hair is different from everyone else's? Is it like the most boring part of me or the best part of me? It's, you always have to wonder.
Hard to say. I don't think we'll be able to really understand until the end, until afterwards, until you're gone. I think then we'll be able to make a educated assumption about it. But, you know, hair is fun to talk about.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Yeah, it's true.
Hair and weather.
Yeah, hair and weather in sports. Sam Beam just released Archive Series Volume 1 this past week, and his short film, Dreamers and Makers Are My Favorite People, should be out this spring. You can hear more of Iron and Wine's folky tunes on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.